Innovation and creativity are central to entrepreneurship. But what happens when you go beyond the edge? The Frontier Entrepreneurship Podcast brings you the world's first, the disruptive, the avant-garde. We take you to the frontier in conversation with the entrepreneurs who are the forerunners of the industries of the future. Get to know their world with co-hosts Braden Kemp and Tracy Morningstar. A green hydrogen future. This would be an era of abundance, the decarbonization of industry, atmospheric restoration, global economic renewal and revitalization. Hydrogen is already being integrated to vehicles, machinery, and more. While the potential is great, there are considerable remaining challenges to realization at scale. Investment is taking place in Canada and around the world, and an array of innovations are being put to the test. If hydrogen will be the fuel of the future, many breakthroughs will be needed. Today, we take you to the frontier of thermochemical engineering with Victoria Xu, co-founder and CEO of Canadian hydrogen startup Clean Innogen.
Today, we're joined by Victoria Xu, an investor, an advisor, and the founder and CEO of Clean Innogen Solutions, which is developing a technology to turn waste heat into hydrogen. Victoria, welcome, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Victoria, we've talked to entrepreneurs in all sorts of industries with varying degrees of technology, but your business is certainly on the deeper end of that technology spectrum. Can you tell us a little bit about what Clean Innogen Solutions does?
Yes, as you just mentioned, we are a deep tech startup and commercializing a clean hydrogen production technology from Canadian Nuclear Lab. It is one of the promising green hydrogen pathway recognized by the Department of Energy from the United States, and the scientific world has been working on that for decades, particularly here in Canada, and now it's ready to get out of lab.
When you say green hydrogen, for someone like myself, who's very limited knowledge of the hydrogen space, what does green hydrogen refer to?
Different color means different level of carbon emission associated with a particular technology. For us, then I believe there are some sort of different ideas of how you define the technology. But generally speaking, green means then a technology that can produce hydrogen without carbon emission.
And so to produce hydrogen without carbon emission, is that, am I right to understand that that is one of the major, call it, roadblocks for hydrogen in terms of being a common power source in industry and for transportation and what have you, is that the production of it is fairly resource intensive?
Yes. The hydrogen is an energy carrier, so it has to be produced from some other ways of energy. Current ways of producing hydrogen is mainly still from the polluting sources of energy, which is actually, it's called steam methane reforming from methane. So that produces a lot of carbon emission from the process. But now there are growing number of green hydrogen production out of the market now. The major one that currently being commercialized is using water electrolyzers. With that, if the electricity is green, then it's green hydrogen. But you are right that even though there are different ways of producing hydrogen, but how do we produce hydrogen without carbon emission in a cost-effective way is still challenging.
I'm pleased to hear that tech entrepreneurs are committed to developing solutions to climate change. Can you talk about someone you've met that has inspired you to follow that same path?
Sure. Yeah, actually, there's no particular person. I would say that there are a growing number of people that really influenced me over the years. And starting from the big celebrity names like Bill Gates, Elon Musk, etc., that they are doing the similar thing. They all started from tech industry, and then they start to look into climate change and start to take actions on that, that everybody, almost everybody know. But I also met investors and other entrepreneurs, in particular from tech sector, that they all share the same passion. So, and the effort, it's actually beyond just being an entrepreneur on this particular one. So they dedicate their, say, personal efforts that are or volunteering or the climate change activities, or they invest in a clean tech, like in my angel investor group that we've seen growing number of angel investors who are from tech industry or are very interested in new sustainable solutions. Obviously, there are other fellow entrepreneurs that I met over the years also share the same routes, that they started from software or other tech industry, but now they think that we need to do something more meaningful, or it's more challenging in a way, unlike the tech industry that have been developed for years, and there's a very clear sort of playbook on how you take a new technology to the market and make a good business out of it. But in the climate change sector, there are so many things are different, are also just new solution or new market demand. So that also means it's very challenging and interesting. So yes, I've been influenced by both sort of the celebrities or the overall growing efforts and from the world, especially the leading force of the world, as well as people just around me in daily lives.
You mentioned your investor group there. So am I right to understand you're also an investor in several companies? I think I saw advisor and board member on your LinkedIn profile as well. How did you get into the world of startups and technology companies?
Sure. So yeah, I started to support the entrepreneurs and tech startups through nonprofit organizations and being part of the ecosystem to connect entrepreneurs with investors and supporting programs, etc. From there, I feel so inspired by those entrepreneurs and see great opportunity there. So then I turned to an investor myself, because after working with them, I feel comfortable to invest in startups myself. Because for most of the angel investors, I think the first few years of investing could be scary, because it's a real investment. It's your own money, and then it's a high risk investment. It's unlike the other financial investment you made, and that sort of have a pretty clear risk profile and what return you can expect. But even though actually that may not be the case because of the volatility of the financial market. But anyway, angel investment is such a high risk investment. But with my experience in the tech startup world ecosystem through supporting them, I've seen so many different startups and successful, or some others don't make it. But that experience gave me enough confidence to start to invest in startups. And that's actually how I got involved in being an entrepreneur myself, after investing in early stage startups. I can feel more comfortable with that because I've seen enough of them. And as I said, similar to being an investor, early days would be scary, and being an entrepreneur could be scary too. It's even more risky because you don't really have the balance of multiple startups, and you have the whole portfolio you are building up, which is a balance of the risk and potentially a mitigation of the risk. But here, as an entrepreneur, then for a particular startup, you don't have that. This is your startup, and it's still high risky. I would say it's a step-by-step process to get me to this stage. There's no, say, single point or single factor that, say, is a decision sort of deal breaker or let me jump into that. But it's a whole process.
We hear that we hear that pretty commonly when I ask that question. It seems like startups and entrepreneurship in general, there's some sort of an opportunity that allows people to dip their toe in, and then all of a sudden, the next thing you know, it's 10 years later, and you're just totally wrapped up in it from a whole number of different angles, and that's been true for myself as well.
Being on various boards, does that allow you to find those peer mentors or like-minded people that you could share and have those deep conversations with?
It'd be involved in multiple sort of efforts that did provide sort of a more connection with people from different background, that's for sure. But, you know, I only have 24 hours a day, that's same as others. So in terms of the sort of having conversations and connections with people and who can provide mentorship, etc., then that has to be sort of balanced, as I mentioned earlier. Then the good thing is now we have all the tools available to manage for the time management and schedule meetings, especially when we everyone know how to work remotely. So I found that's very helpful because I can just sit comfortably here, but I can manage to work on multiple projects and schedule different meetings, and I don't need to run from one office to another. This is the office, and I can manage all of that, and everything is scheduled. If it's about strategy, or it's about marketing, or it's about fundraising, that's sort of, most of these are universal. So I found that's actually now helpful rather than distracting me from one another.
I want to jump back to the hydrogen sort of sector. Maybe we can learn a little more about how that works. So assuming, you know, you and the company make this scientific breakthrough and you're able to produce green hydrogen at scale, what happens to that hydrogen you're producing? Like, who's the customer for it? What does the market look like?
So we aim for the heavy industry that who cannot sort of electrify easily, means that they cannot just rely on green electricity to decarbonization, that these are our users. Actually, I believe the majority of the green hydrogen users should be them instead of, say, residential or something like that. So because electrification can probably solve 50% of the decarbonization, but for heavy industries and where they typically require a high temperature for their operation, for their manufacture process, etc., that using electricity just doesn't really make sense, or that's just not enough, or not possible, or not scientifically it's still possible, but economically it won't make sense. Similar to, say, like EV, if it's just a passenger car, that makes sense. But if you're talking about heavy duty vehicles, then using battery start to face challenges because of the various of reasons, right? Similar case for the heavy industry and manufacture, sort of the heavy energy consumers. That's our ideal client. And the good thing for us is that we started from turn their waste heat to green hydrogen on site for them. So then we can get around that cliche chicken and egg issue, or supply versus demand issue. Then for new thing like hydrogen, you need the demand to drive the production, and while you produce it, where do you find the enough demand to drive it? So that's still a challenging in the overall hydrogen industry, but we are able to prove that there's a way for us to work on it, particularly because our production technology is mainly driven by high temperature heat, which is abundant on the potential client site for us. So then it's a nice sort of closed loop system. And we can start from produce a little, small scale, because that's needed at the early stage of a commercialization, the technological commercialization. But we still make it economical because of this reason. And while the industry, also the hydrogen industry, is also growing in terms of the other technologies to make the whole ecosystem work, including the storage, transportation, because these are major hurdles as well, because the storage and transportation of hydrogen is very expensive because hydrogen is so light. It has to be compressed with high temperature, and it has to store at a very low temperature, high pressure, and then store at a very low temperature as well. So all of these and several others all drive up the cost. But I believe that this eventually will be solved, but just takes time and to drive that. While we wait for the whole infrastructure, whole sort of ecosystem mature and ready, then we can, at the same time, we can grow, we can develop our technology to be able to produce at a scale. So we'll see us to be able to produce hydrogen at large scale as like so, say centralized plants, etc. in the near future. Yet it will be years away, but that's not an issue to us because of our business model, that we can make it a closed loop waste heat to hydrogen and serve our clients on site, because the major clients for hydrogen that we believe should be these heavy industry who cannot rely on electricity to do their to help them decarbonize their operations.
So that initial business model then is sort of circular in your clients' operations are providing that waste heat that you need to in turn generate the hydrogen that's going to go right back into that operation.
Yes, exactly.
Very cool.
What is the valley of death in entrepreneurship?
I think that Death Valley is more applicable to deep tech startups like ours, because these type of startups require more capital investment, both in the scientific research phase and in the early commercialization stage. So the Death of Valley is particularly referred to when it's done in the scientific community and then shifted to the business world at the early stage. That's the gap, that's the valley, because scientific world thinks they're done. They prove it's working scientifically. But then business world, I think, look at this and say, oh, there's nothing demonstrated in the real world yet. And it still requires significant amount of capital to demonstrate that. Then that cost issue. That's exactly where we are now, because these are sort of deep tech. It's not something, say, like I can build in my garage, which we've heard a lot of successful cases of a garage startups. Unfortunately, these type of things is like a particular ours, not small gear or something. So it's sort of, that's a very acute challenging to startups like ours.
What does that timeline look like? So, I mean, you mentioned it's a long road to commercialization. How many years are we talking about between, you know, your initial kind of start the company and research into the technology to where you have, say, a major pilot customer and you're generating a significant amount of hydrogen for their operation?
For us, the timeline is relatively long compared to sort of the average startups. Because as I said, it's not some small gear that they can produce in a garage. It's basically a chemical plants that we are building, small chemical plants. So that's why the timeline wise, it's on the long side. So we have been working on just preparation of the commercialization and get everything ready to launch the pilot for about 2 years now. And then the building this first pilot will take 2 years as well. And then after that, you will to get build several more demonstration, and that will be TRL level 7-ish, which is still not commercial stage yet. So yeah, our current view is in it will take another 4 or 5 years until we can really run more commercial scale plants. And because these are also capital intensive, so it's relatively on the long side, and we don't want to push for it because these are hydrogen plants, right? It's not there are safety concerns, there are reliability issues that will be very important for us to make sure it's incorporated in the whole design and operations. So that's not something that we can just sort of similar to some of the home gears, you can iterate so quickly. We will be very cautious about doing it. And there are sort of industry sort of practices to guarantee those. But we don't want to rush, and that's why we're talking about years for sure for this type of technology commercialization.
With that long timeline and as you mentioned, the intensive capital input, is this something that the federal government is supporting financially through, I know there's a number of programs in place on that path to net zero. Is hydrogen technology looked at in a friendly way in those programs?
Yes, we are fortunate to also have the Natural Resources Canada and NRC, and there's several other agents like STDC, and these are all programs that we work with. I would like to say it's not just Canada, it's worldwide that there's support, and we are also working with some of the sort of global competitive leading programs. Majority of them are grant applications and offerings, so we're very happy to see the progress we made through those. That's definitely one of the pathways that we solve the Death Valley, because if you look at the capital needs, there's no way that private investment would invest in the total amount of capital needs here, because at this early stage, it's almost with that capital demand, that has to come from private sector, then it will not be investable. Because, it's not about dilution or whatsoever, but it's about valuation. We're very glad to see the support, and we are able to demonstrate that we've done that. We've progressed well, and then find a way to make it investable because of that. And get us out of the Death Valley because of that.
That's fantastic to hear, because I know that support doesn't always line up for everyone in all industries. But if the private sector financing won't come to the table at the early stages and the public sector does, that means that system is working how it's supposed to. So that's great to hear.
Yeah, it's a collaboration that they have to go hand in hand. And most of the programs that are sort of matching programs, then it's a de-risk tool for private investors investing early stage companies like ours.
Yeah, we're seeing that a lot in most of the government and public backed programs now, that matching, whether it's 1-to-1 or 2-to-1 or something like that, to de-risk the private investment, it seems quite successful.
Okay. What does the concept of frontier entrepreneurship mean to you?
I like that question. We know electricity and electrolyzers is not enough to solve the climate change. That's a low-hanging fruit. But there has to be someone working on one step ahead. Because if you wait until that bottleneck shows up, these technologies take years to commercialize, and it's going to be too late. I think my startup, the CleanoGen, is a a very typical frontier. I am proud to say that. But on the general entrepreneurial and startup side, many of them doesn't need to be frontier per se, but they can be fashioning, because so that's needed too. Most of the entrepreneur books or whatever sort of the rules would be how you identify a growing needs and market needs, and then you just address that with existing technology and then make it a good business. But that to me is not a frontier entrepreneur, even though I invest in them.
Victoria, that's a really great insight. And Tracy, I think that's a perfect way to end this conversation. Victoria, thanks so much for joining us today. I really enjoyed learning about your company, your background in the hydrogen sector in general, which is, you know, not something I think the general public has a lot of awareness for.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. I enjoyed the conversation as well.
Great.
Thank you, Victoria.
Thanks.
We'll be right back after this short break.
NCFDC is located at the Venture 13 Innovation Center in Cobourg, Ontario, just over an hour east of Toronto. V13 offers a soft landing opportunity for tech startups, flexible co-working space, and event venue. Head to venture13.ca to learn more. That's venture13.ca.
We return to the Frontier Entrepreneurship Podcast with co-hosts Braden Kemp and Tracy Morningstar.
Tracy, I expected that conversation to be really technical, but it didn't go that way at all. You asked Victoria about advising startups, and she just lit up. You could tell she was really passionate about learning from and giving back to other entrepreneurs. And she said something that I really liked. She said, it's hard to find a perfect advisor, but we don't need to look for a perfect advisor. And then mentioned something about, you know, needing a variety from different backgrounds. Is that something you see in your day-to-day working with entrepreneurs as well?
Yes, I think it is, because entrepreneurship is something that more like a journey, you know, journeying through and finding your place within the market or within the needs of what Canada is looking for or outside of Canada. But yeah, it's each entrepreneur is different. Even as we have these discussions, we're learning more and more how they develop, how they grow. Even as an individual, each, you know, especially with her, she had talked about Death Valley and in entrepreneurship and that valley. I thought that was also very interesting.
Yeah, it's more and more, you know, you realize, and we realize as we go through this, that these businesses are about the people that are starting them and running them, more so than the technologies or anything else. So it was great to hear from Victoria today. Thank you, Tracy. And thank you again to Victoria from Clean Inogen for joining us. And we'll see you again next time on the Frontier Entrepreneurship Podcast.
This edition of the Frontier Entrepreneurship Podcast was made possible with the support of FedDev Ontario and the Government of Canada. Special thanks to Victoria Pitchler. The executive producer of Frontier Entrepreneurship is Robert Washburn. I'm John Hayden. To find out more, head to our website, ncfdc.ca. That's ncfdc.ca. Thanks for listening.